Afternoon, everybody. Sarah, we're recording.
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, I think we can get started the minute after 1 o'clock on Thursday, December. Oh, I'm sorry, Thursday, April 17th, 2025. And the Private Activity Bond Committee is called to order. For the record, my name is Jaime Alvarez. I'm the Director of Debt Management at Oregon State Treasury, the Treasury's designee and the Chair of the PAB Committee. And I would want to do a quick roll call for the committee members. So if you could please identify yourself. I could start with Rhonda.
Hi, Rhonda Nelson, Capital Finance Manager for the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm the designee for the Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you. Teresa?
Hi, Teresa Diebel, Director at Occam Advisors, and I am a public member.
Great, thank you. And I just want to thank everybody for your flexibility. We had to move the meeting date from the original scheduled date. We had a couple conflicts, but appreciate all your attendance. So everyone should have received copy of the agenda and meeting materials, which is posted out on the website for the topics that we're going to cover here, and we are sharing the agenda itself. So real quickly, we're going to talk about the activity bond status, kind of where we're at, and then also entertain a volume cap request from Oregon Housing. So as a reminder to everybody or all the attendees, just please mute your mics, and committee members, please feel free to come off mute at your discretion. Okay, so with that, let's go to item number two on the agenda, and I will turn it over to Sarah. Sarah from Treasury, she'll walk us through the private activity bond status.
Thank you. Oops. All right, so first up is the 2024 carry forward summary. In the January meeting, Oregon Housing and Community Services was awarded all of the 2024 carry forward, $134 million. As of last week, they have closed two projects, which has used $99 million of that 2024 carry forward. And I believe they were set to close another one today. I don't know if anyone from housing wants to chime in.
Yes, hi, this is Angie Cleveland with Debt Management. I can confirm we are in the process of closing another conduit as of today to use the remainder of the carry forward.
Sweet, thanks, Angie. And then for just the 2025 volume cap status, quick rundown. Total state volume cap is that $555,408,230. There were no allocation requests at the first quarterly meeting, so the committee still has its $104 million to allocate. The other $451 million were legislatively allocated to a couple of state agencies, OHCS and OBDD. And as you can see, housing has used some of that legislatively allocated amount already on M. Carter Commons. And then as for current allocations, like I said, there have been no requests in the January meeting. For this meeting, Oregon Housing and Community Services has requested $50 million of the 2025 volume cap. If they are approved after today, that would leave $54 million left for the committee to allocate for the remainder of 2025. All right. And with that, then,
okay.
I don't know if there's any questions or we want to turn it over to OHCS.
Yeah, before we do that, any questions from the committee members? Pretty straightforward at the moment. Okay. All right, thank you, sir. Yeah, I think with that, we'll turn to number three on the agenda. And it's a presentation from Oregon Housing. Matthew, is you going to present this?
Yes, I'll kick us off. I don't see Director Bell was hoping that she could find time to join and kick us off, but I don't see her in the meeting, so I'll get us going. So we have a request today for $50 million of private activity bond volume cap for our single family lending program. You know, we wanted to be cognizant of the fact that the committee typically only grants about 25% of their yearly allocation each quarter. So we're asking for roughly half of what is available since this is the second meeting. This would be to support our single family bond program. As you all are aware, we've been allocating all of the agency's private activity bond cap that's given to us by the legislature, and our ongoing carry forward requests we allocate directly towards multifamily. And so we are still in the process of getting all of those projects ramped up for the year. I have with me today Natasha Detweiler, who is the director of affordable rental housing, who will give you guys an update on where we're at with the 4% pipeline, and also Director of Homeownership, Keeble Giscombe, who will provide kind of some overview of how our programs have been changing and lay the table for why we are coming with this request today versus waiting till later in the year. And then I'll just kind of outline what's happening with the bond sale. So with that, I'll turn it over to Natasha. And great. If you want to go to the PowerPoint, I hope that you have it. If not, I can share.
Yeah, I think it's in the packet. So, yeah. Hello, Private Activity Bond Committee. For the record, if we do that here, Natasha Detweiler-Davey, Director of Affordable Rental Housing at OHCS. And I'm excited to have OHCS bringing forward the single family request for resources. I also wanted to make sure to come back and just give you an update, the quarterly update on where we are on the rental housing side of investments. And I think we can go to the next slide. So I think we've kind of the version of the chart that I have been sharing on in these quarterly conversations. And so you can see here, on the left, these are the private activity bond resources currently with OHCS. The stack there in the darkest green on the right-hand side are projects that have closed already. That continues to change on a basis of when the projects are closing. So I think the referenced closing that has was talked about a little bit earlier is probably in here as commitments. And so that continues to get darker green as we go up. The top part there are the private activity bond resources offered in the ORCA. We, you know, as part of the system change of our funding processes and the creation of a centralized application process, adding tax credits and 4% tax credits to that application was the last big lift of really implementing our ORCA application. And so the QAP, the Qualified Allocation Plan that we are federally required that governs our tax credit resources was finalized in the first quarter of the year. We were then able to open our 4% offering within the ORCA at the start of March. At the time we were drafting this presentation, 11 projects had fully submitted for resources. I think that, again, as folks continue to work on applications for resources, that will continue to change and we'll continue to evaluate as they move forward. And those projects had requests that were far larger than the private activity bonds resources that we have. But I am excited to be able to say that as we are working toward preparedness for our May Housing Stability Council meeting, where our slates of projects are reviewed for consideration of reservations, it is the case that we're going to be making recommendations for projects to fully subscribe all of the private activity bond resources that you see in that light green color here on this graph. potentially might go a little bit over. I think part of the reason why we're not prioritizing requesting resources for private activity bonds for the rental housing side of the production space is really wanting to make sure that we need it. We know that as pipeline projects have moved forward, there are challenges that have been, you know, we used to talk about them as unprecedented, and then they have become in the last 4 years pretty predictably unpredictable. And so if we look to the next slide, it's kind of highlighting some of these challenges that we see. I think opportunity in being able to have the strength of the ORCA and clarity around projects and their readiness status, aligning into the ORCA, it has intentional means for identifying progress towards construction closing and parameters and boundaries around that so that we have ways to pull resources or have different conversations than we had previously. I think the on the challenges side there, I think gap financing, the cost of construction overall is incredibly challenging. And so as we're looking at the scale of financial needs to project, that means that those scales of needs are growing on both kind of in all places and all sides. And so putting pressure on our, you know, grant loan subsidy side, the gap filling side of resources, as well as private activity bonds. But that prior, the place where we had vastly oversubscribed demand for resources between Metro Bond funded projects and state funded projects, that we have kind of gotten over that peak of concern. And so now we're really looking at fully deploying resources to projects where we can be tracking that they are moving forward at the same time. I think there are a lot of uncertainties in the marketplace, both on the cost driver side, certainly impacted by shifts in federal policies, and then corresponding shifts in interest rates. And, you know, and I think then those all influence how equity investors and private lenders are all going to be interacting with projects and financing opportunities. And so wanting to make sure that we are responsibly stewarding the public resources in a balanced way that can allow production to move forward. And wanting to take advantage of all of the opportunities that we have. And I think with that, maybe I'll pivot the presentation over to the homeownership conversation, as there are many opportunities seen in that space, which is where we are bringing forward the single family private activity bond request process. And so yes, Matthew Keeble, I will hand it off to you.
Thank you, Natasha. Good afternoon, Private Activity Bond Committee. My name is Keeble Giscombe, and I'm the Director for Home Ownership Division here at OHCS. I'm really excited about the programs that we've started up in the last several months. I know we went through many years of just trying to figure out how we could get it started, and I'm excited to introduce our Assistant Director, Mr. Scott Shaw, so he could talk more about our lending program here at OHCS.
Committee members, good afternoon. Scott Shaw, Assistant Director of Homeownership Lending. As Keeble said, we're pretty darn excited about what we're seeing here. So this is the first home single family lending program that actually kind of brings us to you today to ask for the PAB. It's called First Home. We launched it in November, and it basically is transitioning away from OHCS had a what we call a whole loan program prior to this. And what we've done is in rolling out First Home and making a product as part of our Flex Lending platform, it brings an MBS structure to our platform, which quite honestly creates for so many efficiencies, allows us to pair DPA. It reduces a lot of barriers to first-time home buyers. It streamlines our process and creates efficiencies because lenders are actually going all to the same place for our resources. They're not using multiple sites and multiple systems as they were before. And as Matthew will be able to attest to, it provides higher quality, higher credit quality for the bond program. And that in turn lowers our reserve requirements, and it gives us more funds and basically access to more funds to do more program lending. So that basically this transition has, it's been met with a it's been met with a lot of fanfare, to be quite honest with you. Next slide, please. Okay, so since we've launched this, the volume is increased dramatically. Part of that is that we went to from 9 lenders to 31 lenders. And this says that we've trained 651 loan officers to use this new product. And prior to that, we had below 100. Actually, an update as of this afternoon, 716 loan officers have taken this training. It pairs with down payment assistance. We've got 4 and 5% DPA or down payment assistance. That's supported by general funds. And our 5% down payment assistance is designed to help support underserved communities. Rural is definitely not left out in this mix. We are pleased to see that 40% of our loans are reaching rural communities. We've hit 27 of Oregon's 36 counties since November. So, and additionally, like I said, we had 9 lenders before. I've been keeping pretty good track of this. Over 17 of our 31 lenders have actually locked a loan using this product. And we've got a table off to the side here, as you can see the current reservation volume continues to go up. We had 70 in March. As of when we logged on just this afternoon, we're at 65 for April, and we got almost exactly 2 weeks left in the month. So there's definitely the demand for that. Next slide. Matthew, I think I'm going to hand this to you for this. Yes?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. I appreciate you getting on, and really that's walking us through kind of what's happened since the November launch of these programs. And to be clear again, I just want to highlight this is a transition. The Oregon Bond, the legacy program, has been in operation since the 1970s, and our agency was a bit behind in the times, so to speak, in transitioning away from whole loans into mortgage-backed securities. I believe now there are only 4 HFAs in this country that still have whole loan programs. The majority are now MBS based for the reasons that Scott mentioned. And the program's been wildly successful. Almost every month we've seen volume increase, as you saw in the last table. And a big part of that is having funds available and having PABs to essentially buy down that interest rate cost to our first time home buyers. So I believe I updated the committee, I think it was in January, as to the PAB use for 2024. We took $75 million that was not needed for the affordable housing program, the 4%, because a number of projects had moved out of 2024 into 2025. As Natasha mentioned, there are issues with cost escalation and getting those gap resources. And so we're trying to deploy PABs to where they are being able to be used more immediately, right? We're trying to come together, Keeble and Natasha, Director Bell, Deputy Director Yant, myself, Scott, and others, to, you know, really drive the agency's process and strategy around our PAB use. So I just wanted to highlight of $75 million we utilized last year, it was put to work in a $94.8 million bond sale. And we anticipate fully expending all of those proceeds by early to mid July. Just depends on volume. We're assuming $6 million a week. Typically, in the past, we had assumed about $3.5 million a week. So that's a substantial increase in volume. Scott mentioned we have had a lot of reservations this month. I didn't realize we were already that high. I just knew from the first month of April, we had 28 reservations, just an example. Typically in the legacy program, we had 10 to 15. So at that rate, we're going to get through proceeds fairly quickly. But with the $75 million in PAB we already have expended, not all of those funds are out the door yet. We're still pairing them, or we're planning to pair those funds with some of the funds in the spring sale. But we've reached 183 homeowners as of when the presentation was done 2 weeks ago. We purchased more since then, but that's 183 new homeowners in the state of Oregon, which I think is great. And so coming into the spring, as some of you are well aware, there's been a lot of market volatility. There's been just it's been absolutely fun. I think as probably Rhonda and Jaime can attest to, with some of the, I'm sure DAS is in the market at the same time, but you know, this, the PABs allow us to keep our spreads high between our borrowing yield and what we can offer first time homebuyers, and still be able to offer first time homebuyers below market rates. And so we are here today to ask for $15 million to support this, or sorry, $50 million to support this deal. We're scheduled for pricing the week of June 2nd and planning to close on June 23rd. So get in before the end of the fiscal year. We'll have $20 million of replacement refunding. So that's PABs that are recycled, not new PABs needed. $50 million would support new tax-exempt PABs, which we'll also use to fund a portion of our zeros to continue to blend, along with another $20 million of taxable funds, just to have enough to support us until hopefully we get to a fall sale. We may need to have three sales this year. The next one will be all taxable, most likely, if we have to move up. And of course, we are exploring, as always, variable rate and other strategies to keep the cost of taxable funds down. But we do need, you know, a 90, 80, 90, 100 million to continue to support the program for any, for a length of time. And so that's why we have our request here today. The 50 million specifically supports roughly about 170 Oregonians getting their first home. That's 50 million at an average loan size of around 300,000. And then, you know, every dollar of these PABs, we use them to blend with our taxable funds to keep that rate down. We can earn 1 1/8 spread on our loans between the bond yield and the mortgage price. And so, like I said, every dollar of tax exempt helps make those numbers work a little bit better as we blend with taxable from last year and taxable from this upcoming spring and later this year. And so, assuming again that we have a similar purchase volume as what we're expecting, about $6 million a week, these funds should last us until October. But like I said, we're seeing a very large amount of demand. And so we may have to either issue larger amounts later this year, or we might have to move to doing three sales. It's just going to depend on the reception of the program going forward. And as Scott kind of mentioned, we're with 9 to 31 lenders, over 700 loan officers trained, a lot more production moving into what is, you know, traditionally the busy season, spring and summer are when folks like to buy new homes. And so I'm excited to see where the data is going to land. You know, we're still only not even a half a year into this new lending program, but it's being very well received by lenders. It's being very well received by homeowners. Instead of offering 3% closing cost assistance, we're now offering real 4 and 5% DPA. We're supporting disadvantaged communities, communities of color across the state with our forgivable loan program. If you qualify under the disadvantaged communities moniker, which you can ask Scott probably more detailed questions about, you can have that 4 or 5% down payment assistance loan forgiven after you paid off your mortgage in 15, 30 years. So I think that about wraps up my comments specifically, and we'd love to take questions if you have any.
Great, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. A lot of good information. I before we go to questions, I do want to, I mean, Matthew, me, you, obviously, we touch base a lot with the bonding program. So what kind of caught me in your presentation was talking about going, being one of the, I forgot the number you said, one of the last, basically, to transition from whole loan to this type of MBS program. So definitely a bit behind the times there in kind of getting into what everybody in the market has already kind of realized. Okay, so quickly, Teresa, Rhonda, any questions from you all?
Yeah, Teresa. I have a few. I just want to make sure, I don't think I saw it anywhere in the materials. Are there any restrictions on how long homeowners need to own their home, or any restrictions on the back end once the financing's done?
Scott, you want to? I figure
I'm just making sure, so I didn't just chime right in. No, it's a good question. There isn't a prepayment penalty on any of the loans. And we don't ever intend to have one on those first mortgage loans. I will say that the second mortgage is repayable, right? So there is a little bit of a hurdle if somebody's going to turn around and sell right after they buy, right? Because they have to pay that DPA loan back. But it's like anything, if you take a loan in, you got to pay the loan back. So does that answer your question well?
Yeah, I think that's enough. Okay. And then I'm also, I think what you've highlighted here is that you're asking for PAB for this because there isn't enough Lyft or gap financing to make the most of the PAB for affordable rental. Is that correct?
I would say it's a little bit more nuanced than that specifically. We have a number of projects on the calendar, one already closed, some that are scheduled throughout the year. But when all those projects were said and done, there was still a significant amount of PAB available. And I'd ask Natasha maybe to speak more about the specifics over there about the ORCA process and how they've timed this all out. But use the PAB certainty, if I have that right, Natasha, with our $450 million legislative allocation plus the carry forward that we received in January from 2024 to take new requests, new applications for projects. And I think when we had spoken about coming forward to the PABC earlier in last month, there were just a lot of projects struggling to figure out, you know, where they're going to get their gap financing, how they were going to make everything pencil out to close. And so we had a bit of leeway on the calendar there. And without knowing there was a whole ton of other projects coming in, we wanted to be able to fund up to the amounts that we had and then come back to the committee later to see if one, you know, Business Oregon, we wanted to make sure that there was still, we realized they didn't get an allocation directly from the legislature this year. I talked to Blair a bit over there about their plans. They want to leave funds at committee so that they can, you know, keep trying to generate projects to come in, have something available. And so we wanted to, you know, be deferential to that in some respect, but we also wanted to, you know, we have the same issue. We have to have the cap available to get the projects coming in. And we have an opportunity, I think, with where the market's at and with our single family loan volume ramping up that, you know, we felt that now is the time, I guess, to try to secure some of that cap while also leaving those resources open so we can fill out our 4% pipeline. Natasha, do you want to expand on that?
I appreciate all of that. I think, and Teresa or council member.
Teresa's fine.
Thank you. Sorry. As we have had all of these challenges over the years in terms of, I think we catch it into readiness, but in like navigating the volatility in terms of these budget deficits and where a project is needed to slip, I think part of our course correction or kind of regrouping around it is, adopting the ORCA structure that has more focused measures of readiness and places where we're really readily checking in on that. And then also trying, you know, in prior years before the resource was overconstrained or the reason why the resource became oversubscribed so dramatically is that it had been so undersubscribed throughout the history of the program. And so where there wasn't really effective gap financing tools to structure with the 4% to make that a really scalable program. And so hadn't really developed the intentionality around looking at programming time-sensitive resources, where we need to think both on that calendar year function in terms of, you know, when do we have it and when is it current year versus the carry forward years. And so we would just be able to use what we had in hand. And I think functionally used to work from a place where we really were mostly spending carry forward on an annual basis to be able to fund the projects that we had in our production queue. And so as we got to the place where, again, multiple public funders were relying on the 4% leverage, that made that prior system insufficient to meet the need. And so as we're looking at the resources we have today, I think we're adopting a strategy to make sure that we're trying to maximize the deployment of resources into community. And so, and also having real intentionality around looking at what are the gap funding that we have available. Let's, instead of funding pieces of things, let's look at making sure that we have fully funded projects in our portfolio, and that we are, in terms of the OHCS gap financing side, really finalizing what our dollars are when it's a much closer to ready to proceed. So when it's at that 6-month mark, where you're getting to that closing calendar. So right now, as we are onboarding projects into our production pipeline, we're understanding the scale of resources that we have in hand. And I'm also we're trying to apply the nuance that some projects will have impacts. And so it can be like where we have had times where we've said we have a full pipeline, and then a couple projects experience something that has stalled them out, whether it be a local ALUBA issue, or it is really just a cost and a gap or a supply chain. We can't, like, this is now delayed 6 months because we can't get this piece figured out. That has meant that we then lose that year's action for the private activity bonds. And we've returned resources. And so we're scaling it in a way that I think we'll, and again, we'll be bringing the recommendations to the May meeting. So certainly next quarter, we'll have a really big update on what is happening and where is all of this looking. But the idea of trying to make sure we, our reservations that we're looking for on the gap finding side will fully use all of the resources and probably a little bit more, so that if there are projects that slip, we're not necessarily underspending. And so I think there is that iterative, and in the circumstance where we have maybe, asserted we're like all of our gap funding resources we have in hand, but that there's projects that are ready to do or that are, what if nothing slips and we're then over scheduled, then we move a project that is going to close in December to January. And, we can forecast that, and that project doesn't experience any significant impact or harm from it. And so I think those are the places where we're trying to balance the desire to deliver the resources with the reality that this will be continue to be a little bit iterative. And I think within all of that, we have our relationships with the housing authorities. So that's just considering the pipeline, the projects that they're looking at driving forward, even without state subsidy, across all of it. I think needing to manage the resource on a year and a half time frame, and it's an annual resource, but we need to flex within that time. And so there is it's a little bit of an iterative process. There's a bit of an art to it, to be responsive to the individual situations, and allow for flexibility within reason. And I think the place of our oversight on readiness and performance to benchmarks and progress is intended to have the nuance of flexibility within reason. So we're wanting to support the production, but put some boundaries on it. And so where a project becomes financially infeasible, we do need to move forward, and that project will need to come back later, but wanting to have those checkpoints a little bit earlier on in the process. For the slate that we're intending to bring to the May meeting, these are all projects that have in their application materials demonstrated that they are meeting all of the signals of readiness in terms of permits and others to be able to actually close and begin construction in this calendar year.
Thank you for that explanation. I mean, that's helpful. I think I'm still struggling a little bit with the notion that, the department, OHCS requested all of the 2024 carry forward for housing with the argument that it was needed for that 4% match. And now that seems to have, there's a lot of nuance here, but that seems to have changed to move toward homeownership, which doesn't require the same match.
I think it's more, you know, I think it's really hard for, and we're getting better at this planning over the course of the year. You know, the PAB resources have very specific time requirements and whatnot on them. And as Natasha kind of said, projects can kind of, you know, when they have these issues, move around and whatnot. And I think, we're trying, it's that ongoing issue. You have to have the allocation available to take reservations, but then you also, what happens when some either projects, you know, don't end up coming through because of gap issues, or they move, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and making sure that we're fully utilizing all the cap and carry forward available. You know, I believe we've tried to be really good stewards by spending our carry forward down first as they come in. We've with today's closing, I think we'll have knocked off everything from 2024. Yeah. And like Natasha had mentioned earlier, you know, we have those reservations in. We're taking reservations above the amount that we have available for application, probably by a little bit, especially if there are cost overruns, et cetera, that still need to be funded. But we also know that when we get to, you know, folks that say they're going to close in November, December, inevitably a couple of those projects end up moving, and then we end up with you know, excess cap that we have to return and get reallocated for the next year. And so, you know, our thoughts around utilizing some of this for PAB specifically, or sorry, for a single family specifically coming to the PABC early, is to maintain that reservation number for the affordable rental housing group, so that we, you know, we continue to set the expectation that all these projects will get funded, but also with the understanding, you know, that we see kind of what's out there. We're taking in a little bit more than that, just to avoid the same issues, you know, we've had in past years with returning cap. But also there's just, you know, there's a lot of market volatility right now. Single family has really ramped up production with this shift away from the old way of doing things to the more modern way of doing things. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we're a little behind the times in getting that going, but, you know, it really is a great change for the programs going forward. But right now, with where the market's at, with the to-be-announced lending market, you still having issues, still kind of being upside down. It would be really beneficial for that side of the business to continue to get some form of PAB allocation. We need at least a small amount every year just to be able to fund our zeros, which is our excess yield. I mentioned earlier, we can't earn more than one and an eighth. We routinely do earn more than 1 1/8, and that excess yield, so to speak, doesn't just go back to the IRS. We're allowed to keep it as long as we fund what are called 0% loans. And so we use those zeros to blend down taxable debt, but you can only match, you know, you have to fund those zeros. So if I want to do something that's, you know, 80% taxable, 20% zeros, I still need some amount of that 20% to be funded by new PAB issuance. And so we're going to always, I think, have to come back and think about, you know, we need 20, 30 or 40 million or so every year for single family, just to make sure that keeps flowing. We can, you know, go a year or two here and there with purely taxable issuance. But the more we do that, and the more zeros we spend down, the more it'll struggle going forward. So a little bit is just, you know, making sure we're getting, you know, a small piece of that, and also taking advantage of the market and the opportunities when they're there, and also kind of knowing what's in our pipeline, knowing that we're funding the local housing authority projects through our volume cap rather than having them come through to PABC, which is great. We're all on the same page. We all have a consistent model that's going through the ORCA process, et cetera. But, you know, with a lot of these things, it's hard to say, you know, exactly where we're going to be at in October, November, and December. And so we're trying to just overall strategy utilize PABs as most efficiently as we can.
Yeah. And I just, one other sentiment I should have also acknowledged is that the other piece is our, because we don't have the supply of gap funding resources from other funders like Metro, who had been funding these cohorts of projects, We have limitations now on the gap funding side in terms of what resources we have to do this pairing. And I think there was a place where we knew that we wouldn't be able, we knew we needed at least as much as we have asked for and are using. And so we knew we could have sufficient resources for that, and that there's this other space. And I'm anticipating, we're hopeful for legislative investment to come through this current legislative session. And also that legislative investment is not going to be at the scale that the Metro Bond plus state investments had previously been, that really put it over. So we're hopeful to continue to be at the place where we're fully leveraging in all cases that we can, but it's going to now be back on that gap funding driver side instead of on the private activity bond side, I think limiting it, but we will see what the market shifts do. And I think we'll learn a little bit more over the next couple of quarters around that, especially as we see what legislative investment is towards gap funding.
Great. Thank you. Chair Alvarez, can I have one more question there?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. Matthew, I think you touched on this a little bit, but it sounded like you issued $75 million in allocation in 2024 for the single family home program. Was that from your internal allocation?
Yes, we utilized $75 million from the legislative authorization for 2024 to reduce the amount of current year volume cap that we were returning to committee for allocation as carry forward for 2025.
Okay, and then you're expecting to continue to need some additional amount every year to support the single family home program.
Yes, and I think part of that is helped by, to some extent, the timing of these projects. Going forward, I would really like to target our fall sale, kind of knowing what's come in with mm-hmm. everything in the affordable rental housing space, the multifamily projects throughout the year. And when we start seeing, okay, we have, these projects on the calendar for November, December, and we know, what has been moving, what's been coming in, over, under, et cetera, kind of like we did last year. But I can see that as going to be our strategy going forward. And there are going to be years where we just won't have it for single family. But, looking through our plans for this year, we just felt like now's the time to strike for that. And with how the market's been, and it's been absolutely a mess. We've seen MMD reset 40 to 50 basis points a day. I have no idea what the market's going to look like in early June. I'm kind of hopeful actually that we lucked out that tariffs got paused for 90 days, which means it'll hit, early to mid July. And so the conversation around all that won't ramp up while we're in the market, that when we're pricing bonds, to hopefully provide some stability. But having the PABs and locking in a lower cost of funds in a very uncertain environment is very appealing to the department.
Great, thank you so much.
Great.
I have just one additional question that hasn't already been answered by Teresa's questions. And it's really just she asked about the qualifications after they get the loan. I'm curious, is there any restrictions or qualifications to even receive the loan? Is it just first-time home buyers? It doesn't matter what income they are, or what income level, or where the location is of the home or anything? Is there any kind of restrictions there?
Yes. Hopefully Scott's still here. He can help walk through this. Here. But there are a number of restrictions, qualifications through the IRS tax code around what you can finance with tax exempt versus taxable debt. And so all of those benchmarks, so to speak, are accounted for in program rules. And that was really the intent for launching our Flex Lending program initially, was to have a non-bond funded side of the business. And most state HFAs had done that in the last decade when interest rates were super low, they could access, basically sell their mortgage-backed securities into the market, generate a very high premium to pay for down payment assistance, and reach borrowers that weren't really restricted like they are under the IRS program guidelines. Scott, do you want to kind of talk about the differences in qualifications between bond and first home and next step?
Yeah. So what we're talking about here is what's called our first home product. Every decade with the census, we get targeted and non-targeted areas that need more economic input. And so we get targeted and non-targeted areas depending on what the county is. I actually pulled it up while Matthew was talking, so I can kind of glance and talk at the same time. And this is on our website. You can go look at it. If you look up Oregon Housing, you look up First Home for Lenders. There's no passwords or anything required. But basically, there are purchase price limits and there are income limits. I'm going to start with purchase price limits. Purchase price limits, like I said, some counties don't have any targeted areas. I'm looking at Clackamas County. It doesn't have a targeted area. So it actually has a sales price cap and that's it. Clatsop County, the whole county is what they call a targeted area. It needs more economic input. But when I say targeted and non-targeted, what that means is a targeted area has more flexible, it has higher maximum purchase price. It has higher income limits. It also is the one thing that the IRS does allow us to do, which is you don't have to be a first-time home buyer. Now, the requirement is that you're not, I'm going to call it empire building, right? So this can be the only home you own. So so if you are purchasing in a non-targeted area and you are not a veteran using a one-time exemption, you are a first-time home buyer. So that was the purchase price limits. When we go to income limits, and I am trying to pull it. I'm not going to be as stealthy as I could be. So the income limits are, you'll have income limits for targeted area, income for non-targeted area, but you also have income limits for 1 to 2 person household and then 3 to 4 person household. So yes, there are constraints is the short answer to it, but it's actually, it's pretty intricate to be quite honest with you.
Okay. Oh, that's helpful. I just wasn't sure if it was just anybody or if there were restrictions. So that's what I was curious. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, great discussion. I don't have anything else. I think everybody took my questions. It was about income limits and future need of the program. So I think you've answered that. Nothing else from me. But yeah, I appreciate the discussion. Now I will entertain any questions or comments from the public. If there's any, Sarah, please let me know if anybody raises their hand. Nope. Okay. Seeing none. So we'll move forward to a vote for the item. So is there a motion to, let me pull it up. Yeah, is there a motion to award the $50 million in volume cap to Oregon Housing?
I move that we allocate the requested $50 million from the 2025 PAB volume cap to the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department for the Single Family Mortgage Revenue Bond Loan Financing Program.
Great, thank you. Second?
I second the motion.
Okay. So with that, it's been moved and seconded. Committee members, how do you vote? We'll start with Rhonda.
Aye.
Teresa?
Aye.
And for myself, Jaime, aye. Okay, great. Item passes. Thank you very much and congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys taking the time and hearing our request. And, you know, we don't anticipate having a request for the July meeting, but we're also happy to come back and provide an update both on the multifamily pipeline and the single family bond issuance, if you would like that. So thank you.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. Appreciate it. Thank you.
We'll anticipate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. And that was the last item on the agenda. So before we adjourn, any comments or any other discussion from the committee members?
None from me.
Oh, yeah, great. Okay, so the time is now 1:50 p.m. and I'll entertain the motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn the April 17th, 2025 Private Activity Bond Committee meeting.
Great. Second?
I second the motion to adjourn the meeting.
Any objections? Hearing none. The April 17th, 2025 PAB committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.